with Kevin Durant's Suns debut right around the corner, Suns fans want to know who's playing, how much, and what'll it all look like. We answer your questions on the Suns rotation and much more on today's episode of Locked On Suns. Let's go.
You are Locked On Suns, your daily Phoenix Suns podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And we are back. This is Locked On Phoenix Suns. We are part of the Locked On Podcast Network, and I'm your host, Brendan Kleen, a credentialed media member covering the Suns for the past 6 seasons, a writer at Suns.com, and the host of the Just Basketball Show, wherever you get podcasts. Thank you for making Locked On Suns your first listen here on this Tuesday. One day closer to Kevin Durant's debut. I feel like I've been saying that for a week, but now we know basically for sure he will be back on Wednesday. So if you're finding us for the first time, or you've just never decided to stick around, when you do find us, hit follow, hit subscribe wherever you're finding us. We're on all podcast platforms, including YouTube. If you are on those audio platforms, give us 5 stars. If you're on YouTube, hit that bell down below, get a notification when a new show goes live, and drop a comment with your thoughts on all things Suns. Maybe your answers to some of the mailbag questions that we're going to get to today. Joining us, as he does every single week, Brandon Duenas. He is a writer at Bright Side of the Sun, a longtime guest on this show, and my partner in crime to answer your questions here on today's show. But before we get to those, we have a lot on Chris Paul, Brandon. We have some guessing game stuff on the rotation with the wing position. A lot to get to, but let's start with a little bit of a look back from that Bucks game. I was out of sorts. I was in my parents' house doing the show. You're in a different location now, so maybe it'll have a similar effect. But I didn't get to everything I wanted to get to, namely that last moment. I broke down clutch time in general from that game, Brandon. But one thing I didn't get to touch on was just how crazy similar that last play with Holiday swatting the ball and Booker not even able to get really a good shot off when he needed to. The similarities with that in the finals, I think Suns fans were kind of going crazy over. What did you take away from how that game wound down at the end?
Too soon. But yes, no.
Right.
It was very similar. And I think just that's just what Jrue Holiday does. First of all, like, you got to give credit to him. He's an elite defender. He's built that reputation for a reason. But at the same time, you know, it's just that those late game situations, that's why you get a guy like Durant. So Jrue can only guard one person. That's one positive. There's not two of him. So it's going to come down to, you know, the Suns just making plays down the stretch and hitting their free throws too. That's really what I think killed them. And I saw a lot of Suns Twitter kind of freaking out about. And look, it's a regular season game. They're still mixing and matching the rotations. There's going to be a lot of experimentation by Monty these final 20 games. So I think there's going to be moments against teams like the Bucks who've played together for so long that, you know, they're going to lose those battles. So obviously every game is huge in the standings right now, so you don't want to drop these games, but it's going to happen from time to time when you're integrating so many new pieces.
I struggle with this, I'll admit, because I didn't really feel, I kind of had the same reaction after the finals that you did, which was basically Jrue Holiday is a freak and there's only so much you can do when he is ratcheted up to, you know, 105% of himself. He's one of the best defenders in the NBA. It's basically him. Well, Andre Iguodala is not really himself anymore, but I would have put him in that category. And then Kawhi Leonard, where if you want to dribble around them, think again, right? Like it's that three guys, I think, and that's about it. And the Suns have had the misfortune of running into one of them in the finals. But then, like, last year happens, right? And it's Dorian Finney-Smith and it's Reggie Bullock. And I do think it's fair to say, and don't get me wrong, this is, you know, getting from 95% of what you're going to be as a player to 100%. But I think that there's a little bit left for Booker to do in terms of tightening that up. You know, I watch the best players in the sport, which is the standard that he has earned. They don't tend to get the ball taken from them in those moments. And he doesn't plenty of times too, right? I'm not trying to say that, but you just said it, right? Kevin Durant is a guy who I think most of us would say he's getting a shot off. He might not make it, but he's getting a shot off. You have to do that. And so I do think there's something to be said, one, for obviously highlighting that Durant will solve some of those problems. But I think just going forward, that's something to keep in mind, is that is a one very tiny weakness that has flared up for Booker over the course of his career, as we've seen him in these postseason moments, is he can get a little loose. If you give him that pressure, there might be some times where he turns it over.
Yeah, no, that's fair. And I think also with Booker, he's had so many late game situations that, you know, sometimes you tend to think that you just expect them to hit every shot and get to their spots just almost automatically. And that's not the case for a lot of guys. But when you hit that status, like you said, he's at, then those expectations shift. So I think the handle can be tighter at times. Like sometimes it's just a matter of locking in and just making sure, you know, you realize Drew Holiday is guarding you. He's going to go for the ball. So you have to get to your spot, make a quick move before he has a chance to strip you, which is easier said than done in the moment. But yeah, I think I agree. I think it's, you know, partially just Drew being Drew, but also, you know, it is something that we've seen from Book a few times now. So don't want that trend to keep happening. And when you have someone like Kevin Durant, it just makes your life a lot easier.
Yeah, I don't want to overstate it. And I appreciate you're helping me out there, which I appreciate. Like, I just think like he's only 26. I think it honestly reminds me of some of the stuff we've seen from Tatum, you know, but it's just that echelon that you kind of put yourself in. And, you know, I don't think it's necessarily always fair either to not acknowledge some of those moments just because it's a great player. You know, I think it's fair to say, and I think that's been a through line. And I think at the very least you have to get a shot off in that spot, and you don't want to magnify a few moments, but that can be the difference between, you know, getting where you want in the standings, getting four wins in a playoff series, on and on and on. And Booker has proven to be a legitimate number one, if not a 1B championship caliber player. And those are the things that you get judged by when you're at that level. But let's move off of the negative. I think Jay Crowder is the other part that I didn't really touch on at all. I broke down that he made a couple big shots, Brandon, but to give some positivity, I did get some joy out of watching that man time and again be tasked with guarding Chris Paul and Devin Booker. And it's one thing when it's Book, because we expect it. He gets by most guys. But for Chris Paul, being 37, to get downhill on Jay Crowder and make plays as a scorer, as a playmaker, that was pretty hilarious. I know Jay Crowder's not, you know, 24 anymore either, but that did give me some joy, and I'm sure it did for Suns fans too.
Yeah, and I mean, that's just kind of who Jay Crowder is. You know, I think a lot of times people just expect him to be this lockdown defender that can move with quicker guards and forwards, and he's really not. So,
true.
You know, especially at this stage of his career, I'd say Bucks fans just need to temper their expectations a little bit when it comes to Crowder defensively. He's more of a team guy than he is a lockdown individual defender. They're probably going to learn that pretty quick here, as we saw. You know, maybe sitting at the gym all season probably didn't help with the whole Chris Paul blowing by him, but yeah.
It's one of those things that happens, I think, when you play with a great player. Like, we always overstate some of these additions that I think superstars teams get, right? It's LeBron getting, I mean, we could do it this year, right? I mean, we're all back to pretending like D'Angelo Russell is something that he has not proven to be, forgetting that his team just got rid of him, didn't want to pay him, all this stuff. Like, Jay Crowder being another example. Again, Russell, Crowder, both good players, but it is funny to hear the, you know, is Jay Crowder the missing piece type of talk, when, for better or worse, and I've criticized the decision too from a asset management standpoint, but from a basketball standpoint, the Suns were perfectly fine for him to spend the season at home, and they weren't worried even when they were losing every single game in December and January. They still let him stay there. I think that kind of speaks for itself. And Suns fans, again, probably feeling a little bit vindicated when it comes to Crowder, but let's move on to the questions. I just wanted to get some more thoughts out on that Bucks game, and you were not able to join me yesterday. So let's move on, though, to starting with Chris Paul, because we got some good questions about him, what to expect the rest of this season, what to expect in the playoffs. Could they close games without him? And he's a guy I haven't talked a lot about. We've talked a ton about how Booker's role will change, a lot about how DeAndre Ayton, a lot about the rotation overall, which we'll get to here with the mailbag as well. But Chris Paul is where we will start first. Today's show, guys, brought to you by Built Bar. If you're looking for a delicious treat, but you don't want a ton of fat and calories, you've got to try a Built Bar. With Built, healthy is actually tasty, and they're so delicious, you won't even realize how good they are for you. What makes a Built Bar so good is that, for starters, they're covered in 100% real chocolate. So each and every bar, each and every flavor, you are getting a ton of chocolate. And it's still not going to go over in sugar, which we'll get to in a second. But then next, they come in unbelievable flavors. Churro, peanut butter brownie, coconut almond, fruit flavors like cherry, strawberry, orange, if you love that type of thing. And here's the deal. They maintain amazing macros on top of all of that. So you're rarely going to break 150 calories, rarely going to break 5 grams of sugar, but you're always getting 15 to 20 grams of protein. I really don't know how they do it, making them delicious without packing them with too much of the bad stuff you don't want to put in your body. You've been talking about Built.com, placing orders there for years, but if you live in the Valley, if you live anywhere with a Walmart or a Sam's Club nearby, you can help yourself there as well. 4 bar boxes at Walmart, stock up, or get a jumbo box. Lasts you a little longer at Sam's Club. Walmart, Sam's Club, or Built.com, whichever one you use, gotta try a Built Bar. Okay, Brandon, so question number one here, we had from at 4X Dominic asking if Chris Paul might be an effective scorer in the playoffs, maybe more so than we realize. And then we had somebody else asking about closing at the only Jay Schneck we had asking if we could maybe see the Suns closing games in the playoffs with point book, being that Chris Paul's defense isn't what it is. So those questions are both from different directions. I'll just put it to you this way. What are your expectations for Chris Paul this postseason? What are realistic expectations for a guy that's 37 with the struggles in his past that he has?
Yeah, I think Kevin Durant, like, that trade alone is, like, a lot of people have said Booker and Ayton are the biggest beneficiaries, but I'd put Chris Paul up there as probably the one that's going to benefit the most, just in terms of saving himself for the fourth quarter when he needs a takeover and not having to exhaust himself throughout the game, just taking that workload off him and just managing, you know, Booker and KD, making sure they're getting their shots. So I think just being that elite game manager and leader that they need is going to be huge. And, you know, they're not always going to need him to score. Honestly, it's just more of just making sure that Book and KD get to their spots, you know, running the pick and roll with Ayton, making sure everyone stays involved outside of Book and KD, just so it doesn't become too stagnant, and just having that leadership. I know it's a meme at this point with the Chris Paul leadership, but really it is important when you're trying to integrate two stars like that together, and you know, having him there, just managing egos, all that kind of stuff, which the Suns don't really have any issues with. But I think in the playoffs, there's going to be some games where he steps up, and other games he's not going to really need to score. It's just going to be, you know, 10 point, 20 assist night from CP3.
Yeah.
So it's going to be kind of a balanced act, but I think, you know, playing with KD and Book's going to take so much pressure off him. It's going to be great.
Totally agree from a sort of maintenance and stamina and health perspective. I do think it's interesting because I still can't get the memory. The season has been so weird that it feels like nothing has been able to lock into place for long enough to measure it. And a lot of the thing that I think we would have learned over the course of the season would have been McHale breaking out. That doesn't matter anymore. So it's hard to say one thing or another with a lot of certainty, but I can't get that memory from opening night out of my head, Brandon, of Chris Paul not closing that game. They had everybody that they planned to have. Obviously, it was opening night. No one got hurt. And campaign was playing really well. The Suns decided to close with him, actually, and then Damian Lee, basically, as the other guard. I think Payne came in later, but that fourth quarter was all the ball in Book's hands, and Chris Paul barely played. The problem with that is, one, we don't know what to expect from campaign, which I think was actually another question we got. But two, you only really can do that if it's a small team. Like, I'm kind of surprised that worked against Dallas, and part of it was just Payne forcing turnovers, making threes, whatever, but campaign looked just as bad as Chris Paul against the Mavs in the playoffs over the course of 7 games when there was an actual game plan. So I don't think that's some foolproof thing. I have a hard time imagining a lineup that I like more in a big game than just having Chris Paul on the court. I just think, yes, there's limitations that he's going to provide you. Maybe for certain moments, for certain reasons, you go elsewhere. But I kind of have a hard time imagining that we're all sitting watching a game in the playoffs and we all think, yeah, take the third or fourth best player off the court. That's the way to win this game. I just can't really see it.
Exactly. And the thing I'm looking at too is just what are the alternatives? And like, you know, yeah. Kogi is most like let's just pencil him in the lineup at this point. Just say he's one of the closing five. Then are you going to go with Torrey Craig? At that point, you know, there's going to be a trade-off either way with offensive ability. Like, I mean, you know, defensive switching and size and rebounding, all that is great, but it comes at the cost of decision-making, you know, on the offensive side of the floor, just what CP brings to the table. So I think there's stretches where they could probably make a small ball line or a point book lineup work, whether it's with Okogie and Ross or Okogie and Craig, or maybe TJ Warren has a hot hand in that night. They want to close it that way against a bigger team that's just attacking CP3 pretty much every possession. But it's hard for me to imagine, just like you, what you said, just it's tough to imagine that being the norm for, you know, every single playoff game. It could be something that we see maybe once or twice, but I just can't see Monty sticking with that and trusting some of these guys in that closing lineup.
Yeah, I think the two teams that come to mind, mostly from the standpoint of, you know, that you're going to switch against them and things are going to be very one-on-one and slow. Those are the games that I think you worry about Chris Paul the most. And so Dallas and the Clippers come to mind. Those are still the teams that I think you're worried about from a matchup standpoint with the Suns the most. I did a show on that, one of the 50 I feel like I've done waiting for this man to play basketball for this team, talking about the teams that I think worry the Suns the most. And it's exactly what I would have said pre-Kevin Durant. I just think those teams are still the ones that are going to give the Suns trouble because they still don't have a ton of wing size. So I could see you know, Booker, Lee, Okogie, Durant, Ayton type of lineup. Or maybe even Durant at the five with Ayton also not in the game. If you're really trying to get creative and some matchup thing has gone awry for you and you go Booker, Lee, Okogie, Craig, Durant, you know. But I just think with Cam and Mikhail gone, the Suns don't have enough shooting on the wing to really pull a lot of those lineups off. And that's kind of the bottom line. You know, how many times did we see Booker and then Crowder, Johnson, Mikhail, and Ayton? That's kind of the peak point book lineup. The Suns can't really get anywhere close to that with their wings anymore. And that's fine. You have other strengths now, but I don't think the roster is really built that way. We have seen Chris Paul playing off screens more lately. They've been using him almost like a two guard, or like almost the way the Celtics would use Isaiah Thomas back in the day when he was an MVP candidate. That interests me. I think we need more of a sample to really judge it. I'll pass it back to you, though. This question from Paul Yarger at VV Rounder, Brandon. He said, if things go well down the stretch, could the Suns renegotiate Chris Paul's contract in the offseason to keep him around another year? It wouldn't so much, I'll answer part of it, be a renegotiation. They already have him under contract the next 2 years. But could you see a world in which, let's say, Chris Paul finishes his contract in Phoenix, especially knowing that they're not as flexible as they were pre-Durant trade?
I think it all depends on one thing, and we all know what that is. If they win a championship, then I think Chris Paul will be back. If not, it would not shock me if they went another direction. They do have some flexibility with his contract. Like you mentioned, it's not guaranteed. So if they've been linked to Fred VanVleet, they've been linked to some other guys. So if the Suns win a championship, I think Chris Paul will be back. If not, I would not say that's a lock at this point. So, you know, it's a pretty big if, but it feels like at this point, James Jones is not afraid to ruffle feathers and make moves like that if he feels like it's going to give him the best chance and at winning. And Chris Paul's contract, you know, could be something he views as a hindrance this offseason that they need to move on from if they don't get it done this year. So it's tough to answer at this point, but it really just depends what happens in the playoffs.
Yeah, it is hard. Jeremiah Heredia also asked, if you were to choose a point guard for next year, who would you choose? I don't think we need to do that right now, but I do think, to answer your question, Jeremiah, a bit, I want to say that Chris Paul's contract is one of the last, his and Ayton's contracts are some of the last chips you have, and I could really see the benefit of, even if they win a championship, depending on what Chris Paul wants to do the rest of his career, using that contract as a way to break it into multiple smaller deals and pay it, move it forward, roll it forward with the contract stuff. You don't want to have a situation, even though there's the flexibility of not having to pay him, which is nice if there's injury problems or you just feel like he's not good enough anymore. Unfortunately, that benefit is there for the Suns, not benefit for Chris Paul. It is what it is. But you also don't want to end up in a situation where his contract ends, he leaves, you never did anything with that salary, you're way over the tax, way over the cap, obviously, and now you have nothing to replace that with, and you're sort of, you know, just losing that asset. That would be the worst case scenario. So that's part of why a trade could make sense. Brandon, let's get to some questions about the rotation and Monty Williams. There was an interesting one about what we want to see from Monty, and it is very open-ended, but I think it's an interesting conversation point. He's sort of one more guy that I haven't really talked a lot about as it pertains to the Durant era here. So let's get to him and the rotation next. First, today's show, guys, brought to you by LinkedIn Jobs. These days, every new potential hire can feel very high stakes. If you run a small business, you want to be 100% certain you have access to the best qualified candidates that you can. And that's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs helps find the right people for your team faster and for free. All you have to do is switch your avatar, your profile picture, put the hashtag hiring frame in there, add it to your LinkedIn profile. People will know you're hiring, add your job to your company page, and then you're off. Simple tools like screening questions make it easy to focus on candidates with the right skills and experience so you can quickly prioritize who you'd like to interview and hire. It's why small businesses rate LinkedIn Jobs number one in delivering quality hires versus leading competitors. LinkedIn Jobs helps you find the qualified candidates you want to talk to faster. So post your job for free at linkedin.com/lockedonNBA. That's linkedin.com/lockedonNBA. All one word, of course, to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. Okay, so let's start with Monty Williams, Brandon, because I think that's the more interesting conversation. You and I guessed some of the rotation stuff last week, and I don't feel like I have a great grasp on it. I talked a little bit about it yesterday too. So we'll close with that, have a little bit of fun, put our guessing hats on. But let's start with the question on Monty, which was from Charles Scholler. He said, with all the new pieces in place on the Suns, what should we see from Monty Williams to ensure success this year and beyond? I'll give it to you to open. Just what kinds of things from a coaching standpoint do you think are going to be important as this stretch run continues, and then obviously with what will be a pretty crazy postseason?
Yeah, so every minute counts. Like, they don't have a lot of time to make this thing work. So I think every rotation, every substitution you make needs to have a purpose, and you need to be thinking about what your playoff rotation is going to look like. So I think, you know, they're not going to be wasting any time. They're going to try to, you know, get it down to a T. I think some point book lineups will be important. I think, you know, trying to experiment with some things offensively, but also not showing too much because, you know, come playoff time, they're going to need some of that creativity left. I think just developing chemistry is the main part. So these closing lineups will be huge, I think, down the stretch in these games. Monty just needs to figure out what, you know, based on the team he's playing, what he's going to feel comfortable with come playoff time. And that's really what it boils down to. You know, regular season wins or, you know, with like the difference of winning by 15 or maybe by five by trying some experiments, you know, isn't going to really change much. If anything, it's going to make them more battle tested. So I'm fine with them trying lineups that could benefit them in the long run, even if it kind of hurts them in the short run. So I think just trying to find your rotations, that's the key at this point. You only have so many minutes, and I'll let you take it from here because there's a lot of different combinations they can go with.
Yeah, let's get into rotations in a second. I will say I think the Suns are going to play things slowly. I did a whole show about that last week, the last one of the week on Friday. Just I went to practice Thursday and I came away, you know, the guys are saying things that are kind of tamping down on the, not expectations. They know the expectation is go win a ring, but they were not trying to get ahead of themselves. And then, you know, Monty was kind of striking the same tone. And the thing that he really said that stuck with me, Brandon, is that he wants the players to teach him how to play them. And I thought that was an interesting way of putting it. Probably something Pop said once upon a time. Wouldn't surprise me. But I think that'll be his approach. And so anybody expecting, like, you know, Wednesday against Charlotte when Durant is going to make his debut, for us to see the most complicated, crazy things that Monty's been drawing up on his whiteboard in his office the past 2 weeks, I think you're going to be disappointed. I think it's going to be a lot of roll the ball out and let it go. Yep. We know Durant will fit into a lot of the staples the Suns already have, but I don't think you have the time, and I don't think it's worth it with the IQ of the guys you have to really get crazy reinventing the wheel. Just let them be talented because they are talented. And I do think, to your point, that the rotation is probably going to be the thing Monty has the most control over, the thing he needs to get right. But the part that I would add there from a locker room standpoint, and he kind of already touched on it because he got asked about TJ Warren not playing, and just I think he said something to the effect of, like, we're going to need these guys to handle this well. And yeah, you know, they're veterans. This is a pretty old team at this point, but it's still going to be tough. And I take an example like what we saw against Milwaukee on Sunday, where Terrence Ross was getting it handed to him a little bit defensively. Monty did take him off the court, but he kept him in the rotation. He checked back in the game, and no one else played. He stuck with the same 10. I think it's going to be very interesting to see, does Monty feel like it's important enough to create some level of consistency and continuity in the rotation that he just rides stuff like that? Or does he sort of realize, hey, there's only 20 games left for us to get all this stuff figured out, I'm going to have to pull the plug on things sooner rather than later? I don't know the answer. It's not an easy one. I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I would do it right, but that's going to be something to watch for sure from a chemistry and mentality and locker room standpoint within what the rotation actually becomes. Let's answer some questions on the rotation though, Brandon. So Cody Hunt at @CO_DHunt, which everybody on Suns Twitter probably knows. He said, rank the following forwards by how many playoff minutes you think they'll get. And he had Terrence Ross, Torrey Craig, Ish Wainwright, and TJ Warren. I'll let you go first from those four players, rank them from 1 through 4 by minutes.
So I think Torrey Craig's going to be number one on that list, just in terms of he's a veteran that you can trust. He's played in the playoffs in the Sun system. They're going to need size at the forward position. So I'm going to go with Craig one, Terrence Ross right behind him at number two. I just think his instant offense with that second unit and a shorter rotation too is he makes more sense than Warren does, I think, in a playoff rotation at this point. That could change, but at this point I'm going to roll with Ross. And then for that reason, I think Ish might actually get the edge over Warren, which might surprise some people just because of due to need. If they're going to need another forward to play, it's probably gonna be something that's a little bit bigger and stronger. Warren's a little bit taller, but I think Ish gives you more of that small ball center type of feel if you need to in the playoffs. But I think Ross and Warren are a little bit interchangeable in a way, just in terms of a playoff rotation of just instant offense. Like, I don't think they need both of them in that rotation, to be honest. So that's where I get that answer.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been surprised. Well, not surprised, but I think the most fascinating part of that forward group for me is going to be Ish Wainwright. Cause I think the most natural way to put Durant, that's the thing, right? We're seeing a 10-man rotation, but you got to account for 30-plus minutes for Durant in there. I did my best guess on the post-game show against the Bucks, and it was mostly taking some minutes from a bunch of guys, but I think the most natural way to do it would just be to say Ish is not playing anymore. That's just, I think it runs counter to what we've seen, because Monty has trusted him. Monty has continued to give him minutes even since adding Ross and Warren. And for good reason. I think he's a very, very solid team defender at this point, and he makes his shots. Like, that's a coach's dream. But you start to get into a problem. I think somebody like Ross, to me, is going to be a very interesting case study in a series like Dallas or the Clippers. Not to keep going back to those two, but they're both potential first-round opponents, and they're both bad matchups for the Suns. And, you know, it's going to be that weird double-edged sword, Brandon, where it's like, on the one hand, you worry about what happens if Ross gets switched onto Luka, right? But you're also in a situation where you don't want to end up like you were against Dallas last year, where you just didn't have enough secondary offense, and Ross can help you with that. So it's going to be weird. What do you think of him? Because he also feels like somebody who could just end up in a in a random game five, like a must-win game five, we could look up and Ross just got a DNP for some reason.
Yeah, I think both ways with Ross. Like, it could, he could swing ways where he's just on fire and you just cannot take him out of your rotation. You have to live with the defensive stuff, and because he's that hot. But then other nights, you know, he could be a no-show. And if he's off to a slow start, you know, Monty could pull the plug on him and maybe he doesn't play at all in the second half. So I think Ross is probably their most dynamic player in terms of, like, you know, he's either going to be that microwave scorer or get a surprising, even though to us it probably wouldn't be that surprising, DNP, just with how Monty kind of manages game by game, especially depending on the opponent in the first round. I think that'll be huge. Because like you said, Dallas and LA, those teams are great at targeting individuals and they got out of their way to do it. So, you know, but shout out to Mavs draft, because he did post a clip of Terrence Ross stripping Luka or shutting him down or something when they first traded for him. So that's the only clip I need to see. I think Terrence Ross is the number one Luka stopper after after seeing that. So
so there we go. And against Dallas, he's playing 48 minutes, but we'll see on the other teams. I would rank it probably, I think, the same as what you said. I would have, well, I'll average it out and say Wainwright actually over Ross, just because I could see that happening over the, like, all of the playoff games the Suns play. But yeah, Craig Wainwright, Ross Warren would be my order. Let's close things out with one last question on this note, which is from Kyle McDonald. Brandon, he said, how many minutes can you realistically trust campaign with in the playoffs? So we talked about that in regard to the point book stuff and the bench and Chris Paul stuff. But with this injury he's coming back from, the first game back against Oklahoma City on Friday, he had a little bit of a tumble that had me worried, but he did play against the Bucks. That's a bad matchup for him. I don't think he played fewer minutes because he was hurt, if anyone was worried about that. I think the Bucks are just a very bad matchup for campaign because they have size at every spot and he's very small. But what do you think about what role he will play? Because he's another guy where you could see when playoff minutes get there and we do see some point book and Durant is there for ball handling in a second unit potentially, and they stagger these guys, you could see campaign actually being somebody whose minutes dwindle, as we saw against the Bucks.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, at point book, you look at how heavy, you know, those starters' minutes are going to be in the playoffs, like especially in those close games where, you know, there's some games where on the Nets, Durant played 48 minutes, or maybe it was 53. He played, I think that Bucks game, he played all 53 minutes. So people kind of forget about that when talking about playoff rotations. It's like, there's not really that many minutes left over in the first place. When it comes, especially with the Suns having the, you know, four of their five starters being as important as they are. So, you know, I could easily see Payne kind of falling out on certain nights, but he's a confidence-based player. So, you know, whenever he's on, he can swing a game. You got to kind of ride that as long as you can. But if he's struggling early, I think Monty, like I said, with Ross, same thing. He could pull the plug on him pretty quick, but we've seen him also step up in playoff games, you know, 29 points and 9 assists, 0 turnovers against the Clippers in the Western Conference Finals. So we've seen it, but can you trust that? I don't know. It really just depends on which campaign we're getting, which seems to change almost every night.
Yeah, he's a hard one to predict. I do think that's a one benefit of him compared to somebody like Ross, for instance, or whoever you want to point to, is Monty has had him around for long enough where I think Monty has a good feel for if it's a campaign night or if it's not. But to your point about the minutes just going up, I mean, you know, even like a guy like DeAndre Ayton, who's usually around 30 in the regular season, you know, Western Conference Finals 2 years ago, he had 2 games over 40 minutes. He didn't play less than 35 in any game. Finals, he had 2 games over 42 minutes. He didn't play fewer than 36 in any of the games, except for the foul trouble game in game 3 of that series. So, you know, that's part of why I don't really, to get to the center spot, which is the last one we haven't hit, no question about that, but I'm not super worried. People have talked a lot about, is it Bismack? Is it Landale? I think it's good Monty has landed on Jock. That's the direction I would go also. But when you think Durant might play some center, Ayton's going to play that many minutes, you probably need, you're not even getting 10 minutes out of Jock, right? And so I think that question starts to be, you need to tread water in those minutes. Like, you can't lose them by a lot, but it's less important than it maybe seems with the regular season amount of minutes. So that was all the questions. Any final thoughts, Brandon? Any parting words before we see the man debut this week?
Wednesday should be a national holiday for all Arizona sports fans. Take the day off. maybe the next day off, depending.
Yeah, I was going to say take Thursday.
But no, just excited to see this thing finally happen. It's an exciting time to be a Suns fan, and you know, hopefully KD gives us a solid debut so we can talk about it more later this week.
I feel bad for the Hornets. I will say that. That is a funny game to come back to, one of the worst teams in the entire NBA with no wing defense to speak of on their team. That's a rough way to wake up on Wednesday if you're a Charlotte Hornet, but that's not a concern of Suns fans. They will enjoy it. I will be there with you, but we have a couple more shows to get to between now and then, guys, so keep it right here. Hit follow or subscribe. Get this show in your feed every single Monday through Friday. We'll probably do a show on Friday night as well for you, an extra one this week because there is another game, and we've waited long enough to see Durant. All right. In the meantime, go make Locked On NBA your second listen today. Catch up on everything else going on around the league, all the games here on Monday night and more. And I will talk to you all tomorrow.